Good morning, everyone. We are broadcasting live from CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Georgia.
And you're listening to Film Picnic.
We begin, as always, by acknowledging that Film Picnic is recorded on the ancestral lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. This land is referred to as unceded territory, as it was not given up freely, and continues to be home for the Indigenous communities from which it is stolen.
It is with immense privilege that we talk into these microphones and share our stories, as stories have been shared for generations before us on this land. We hope that Film Picnic can be a space for shared accountability, knowledge sharing, and reconciliation. This always was and always will be Indigenous land.
If you're new to our show, or just tuning in for the first time, here on Film Picnic, we combine expert research and interviews with industry professionals to take a deep dive into an occupation or special topic relating to the film industry. Hannah, why is today special?
Today is special because it's our second guest episode in a row.
which is typically we, here on Film Picnic, we alternate between a guest episode and then a little internal episode with me and Hannah gabbing.
We love our guest episodes, yeah. And you guys do too.
Yeah, no, it's been really, really fun. It's really great. Our guest today is a fellow Vancouverite and UBC alumnus whose professional career includes over 30 years of experience as a set decorator in the art department of the world of TV and film, spanning a diverse range of projects from big budget blockbusters, try saying that three times fast, to critically acclaimed television series. Some of his most recognized projects include The Revenant, for which he was nominated an Academy Award, Man of Steel, Bad Times at the El Royale, The Cabin in the Woods, and the Apple TV series Pachinko, which I just recently saw. This guest's ability to create immersive atmospheric worlds is a testament to his deep passion for the craft, and we're just truly fortunate to have him here with us today to share insights from his artistic journey. It is a pleasure to have you with us, Hamish Purdy.
Thanks.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Hannah. Thanks, Georgia.
We're so excited.
Of course. We were just, in doing some of our research, we were looking on IMDb. I'm gonna say this because I don't know if Hannah would come out immediately and say it. I'm proud of you and I'm excited for
thanks,
you.
Thanks, Georgia.
Hannah auditioned for Percy Jackson in the Olympians, which we saw that you worked on.
Yeah, I'm still working
You're
on
still
it.
You're still working on it.
Yeah,
okay.
So season
That's
two.
Shooting in this area, isn't it? Some of it?
We shot down by Spanish Banks
recently. I was telling Georgia this recently. I feel like there was some
smoke.
Big smoke. Yes. I remember. Yes, I was driving along and I think people were like, what is going on? People were concerned.
My mom was at Bowen Island and she was like, what is going on over there? Like,
they could see
I'm sorry. Sorry.
Okay.
Fake smoke.
Yes. Okay. Fake explosions, fires, whatever. Yeah. So that's really awesome.
So there's Percy Jackson has five books.
Mm-hmm,
right? Lightning Thief, first season.
Yes.
Sea of Monsters, second season. So we're doing
Sea of
Monsters.
So each season is
8 episodes and one book.
Oh, awesome.
That's great.
So
because that
be
was...
five seasons. Great.
Yeah.
I audition again.
Yes. No, you get in there. Honey.
Yeah. So that was a lifeboat we blew up
pretended
to blow up. And yeah.
Okay. That is so cool.
Because I was just thinking they initially tried that as a film with Logan Lerman.
They did. They did Lightning Thief and they did Sea of Monsters.
I've seen both of those films.
And I don't think I think Lightning Thief did okay. I think Sea of Monsters maybe not so much. And I know that the creator of the book, the writer of the books, Rick Riordan, wasn't really happy with the direction they went. So we're kind of pretending those never happened.
Okay.
And we're just starting fresh. And Rick is a producer on our show.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And
great.
So, yeah.
I feel like that always makes it so much richer when you've got the author.
Well,
is he on
so
set?
Important.
He's around.
Great.
Yeah, he comes and goes.
He's not acting as the showrunner?
No. A guy named Dan Schatz is our showrunner.
Okay.
But Rick was very much involved in the casting and all that sort of stuff. And
So
we built a Camp Half-Blood out in Langley.
We were just talking about how so much is shot in Langley these
Gotta
days.
Go there after this.
Goodness, an hour drive-ish.
Yeah.
There you go. I was going to say, too, Hannah and I.
Oh my goodness!
Preview for what Film Picnic is up to this month.
Yes.
We're going to be attending the Whistler Film Festival.
Yeah. Shauna Hardy runs that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There we
Brentwood
go.
Alum. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness! Yeah. Oh, for context as well.
There we go.
Georgia and Hamish.
Well,
went
I was
to the same
I was,
high school.
I was yeah. But then I was like, that makes us sound like
no different
Pierce.
Decades.
different decades.
Really?
I was in the same class with Hamish's son, Cameron.
There you go.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. There you go.
So, fellow Brentonians, fellow UBC attendees,
That's right.
Yeah.
I was going to say, well, just in regards to the Whistler Film Festival, we're, because we're doing a little bit of media, we're, you know, just putting together research on the films that are happening, and Heretic is playing. Is that how you say it?
Heretic, yeah.
I love horror movies. I love A24 horror. I was so excited to see it already, and then to hear that you have been involved in that project, I'm like,
Yeah, we just we finished it about a year ago.
Okay.
And it was a tight little shoot. It was 6 days on location.
Oh, that's all.
And then 30 on stage.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh.
Because of the whole house. So,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Where was the location?
We were out in Squamish for a few days. Actually, we were downtown at a church. And then we were in Squamish for a couple days. And then we were at a house quite near here for like the exteriors of the bad guy's house. And then everything else was on stage. Out in Pitt Meadows.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. That's so cool that was shot here with Hugh Grant.
Yep.
Yeah.
That is inspiring to me. I always think about Vancouver as like a... I mean, I came to Vancouver because the film industry is so much richer than it is in Sydney in terms of like opportunities, I think, with starting out.
Mm.
So it's always exciting for me to hear when things are coming or when things are shot here because I'm like,
The house that we used for his exterior was the parents of a film teacher from Cap U.
Oh, wow. Great.
And he said, hey, after you guys have, you know, can I bring my students back to the studio to see, you know, what, the interior of the house that you're doing here?
Yeah.
And so all these students from Cap came out to the stage and they met Hugh and they met
Oh, my goodness.
And they got to see the whole
thing.
Bad time
to be a UBC film
that
student
is
right now.
Literally, thank you, UBC, grateful for you. But there's so much shot here that the students are not allowed to, like, know what's shooting, be anywhere near it.
Oh, just get close.
Had one film class where it was a producing class where our prof, Sharon, took us onto set. It was when they were shooting, oh my goodness, Better Call Saul. They were shooting that year.
Bob Odenkirk.
They were shooting that year, So we got to stand on set and just watch them. But
that's kind of how it started. When I was studying English Lit here, I was sort of dabbling in film, and there was things being filmed, student films and some TV shows, and I just kind of gravitated towards those big lights and just sort of, what is that? And how does the power get into this place?
Yeah.
And, you know, it looks like they're setting up for an explosion. And I just loved it.
Yeah.
I just got closer and closer.
Yeah.
A great segue into our first question. We just want to touch on the beginnings of how you got into film. Because you attended UVic also.
Yeah.
And you said Langara earlier.
Yeah.
And then...
University of Victoria.
Yeah.
For those who don't know.
the
you traveled, did you say?
And then I traveled.
Yes.
And then I came back and it's like, okay, let's finish this off. And then went to UBC.
So did you take kind of like a gap?
Mm-hmm.
A gap,
off to Australia.
Off to Australia. Okay, we were just talking. You went to Wagga Wagga, which is such a small world. That's where all of my mom grew up in Wagga Wagga, small town.
Yeah, I remember it. The city's so nice, they named it twice.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Very small.
Yeah.
Cute.
Tiny.
Yeah.
How long did you spend in Australia?
I was there for 6 months.
Oh, okay. Yeah. A good chunk of time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was great.
A nice little break from English literature.
Yeah, and you know, when I came back, I was ready to go back to school. Like, I wasn't dreading it or anything. So I do believe in gap years. And,
That's good to hear.
I was looking at an interview that you did, it was a talk you were giving, and you said maybe that you were working on rock videos.
Yeah,
or
well,
something
the,
like that?
In the beginning of music videos, you know, when MTV or Much Music in Canada, you know, there'd be local bands like 5440.
Great.
Have you heard of them? 5440? Okay.
I've heard.
Okay.
I've
local
heard
band.
Yeah.
Local band. And they've been around forever. And they had a music video they were going to do. And I met someone at UBC that was in the film program but also had done, said, oh, we could use help. And that's really, you know, one of the most common questions is like, how do you even get started?
Yeah.
And my journey is old, so it's different, right? This is pre-internet and all that sort of stuff. But it really was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
This weekend, are you available? Because they could use an extra hand. You know, there's no pay. I'm just happy to be there.
Yeah.
And then when you're there, you meet other people that are also like, what's the next thing going on?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you sort of, you know, like, we're going to work on this Subaru commercial because they need people to drag bags of leaves around because it's supposed to be the fall. Or,
yeah.
You know.
What was some of the random jobs that you did in your first? Do you remember any of the like random tasks that you had when you were working
like
for
painting
free?
And building and like going to find stuff?
So it was always straight into kind of like the set decorating.
It wasn't
art production.
Yeah, it was a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Because it was sort of, you know, run and gun in those days. Like filming without permits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Having a pair of hands.
Yeah. Exactly. And being useful and listening and being quiet when they're rolling and just sort of I mean, it takes so much of your time, as you know, that your interest is what's going to keep you going, right? Mm. It's not the money or anything like that. It's being interested in the craft. And then I was doing sort of like music videos or student films or little things like that. I think even some PSAs, you know, like some of those I think I helped with.
Yeah.
Just like moving gear.
Yeah. Mm.
And then I got onto a small Canadian independent film called Impolite.
Yep.
And just as a production assistant, and I've told the story before, but I think by lunchtime of day one, I had joined the art department.
That's great.
They needed someone, and I was like, these are my type of people.
Yeah.
Right? Like, make it look cool. Make it look dirty.
You know?
Make it look broken into or whatever.
Yeah. Effortless.
And, yeah. And, yeah. And for me, that was just like that make-believe for sure was just spoke to me, you know?
Yeah. We did.
I felt very comfortable.
Yeah.
In that. And so I just kept going.
That's really cool. I think we talk a lot on this show about what you just said of making connections on set and just being a pleasant person to work with and putting your hand up to be there and to help out. And so people will think of you.
And that doesn't change, you know.
No.
Like even, I mean, ultimately I was working on movies of the week and these crazy shows and we were head down working and then someone said, oh, the union's having a membership drive. And I didn't even consider joining the IATSE union, which is really any big show would go to there for the crew.
Yeah.
It wasn't even on the radar. I was so busy. Mm. But I was like, okay, let's go down there and sign up. Mm. And then it opened a whole new world. And then you're just working. But even now today on big, you know, Disney or Warner Brothers shows, as you come to the end of a production, everybody's talking about the same thing, which is, what are you doing next? Oh, I'm taking time off. Or, oh, there's this little thing that we're going to do. Or, you know, like it's still that. You should put your name in. They're asking for, you know, so it's still sort of, everybody's in the same boat. As you come to the end of a project, it's like,
Where's the momentum going?
What's next?
Yeah. Are you going to keep going season after season, or do you want to start doing smaller stuff or your own thing? So,
what do you prefer? Do you like longer, you know, you're doing Percy Jackson right now.
I do, and it's two seasons in a row.
Yeah.
Oh, but Heretic in between.
Yeah.
Heretic was lucky because that was during the writers and actors strike.
Oh, okay.
But it's an A24 film, so they weren't part of the negotiations.
Because A24 is indie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, $1 billion.
Company. Yeah.
That's
I did
so
a final report on it last year.
But I like a big, long project for sure.
Yeah.
And, of course, my crew loves that.
A steady paycheck.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, even the little thing, Heretic, which we took a pay cut and it was small, very small budget. So we had to really concentrate on keeping it in, you know, within budget.
Mm.
That's also fun.
Yeah.
Really rewarding. So I think as I move along further in my career, probably closer to the back end of it, I have the luxury of maybe being a little more selective and really, I mean, it sounds sort of arrogant, but really choosing based on like story and script and who's doing it.
I think at this point in your career, you're very much allowed.
But you know, like you should be, like at the beginning of your career, you just say yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like you just, because you don't know where the next one's coming from.
Yeah.
So we would, if I could finish something on a Friday and start a new thing on a Monday, that was, great. And then eventually you find, you know, 20 years go by, it's like, where are all my friends? You know, like, I didn't concentrate on that part of my. So,
talk about that.
We just had a whole episode about burnout and work life balance.
Yeah.
Last week.
So, the instinct is to say yes, but what you're trying to do now, or I'm trying to do now, is carve, rather than find the work, is find the time off, right? Find the gaps and make sure, you know, within reason. I mean, we've got to feed family and stuff like that.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But a little less. One thing is important is I don't want to not want to go to work, right? I don't want to wake up and dread it.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there's days where it's harder than others, but
when you're
it's
waking
pretty
up at 4 in the
cool.
morning or something.
Yeah.
Driving to Squamish.
But generally, it's pretty cool to, on Sunday night, be excited about the next day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And if you can, in anything in life, if you can have that sort of feeling, that's priceless, mm-hmm. right? To be kind of excited about what you're about to do that week rather than, Monday, you know. So maintaining
do you,
that.
Do great. You have a project in your career that you can think of that you really felt that excitement? Like, I know there's probably quite a few. But
oh, yeah, but it could be. It could also be the crew or the people that I'm working with rather than the subject.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
So, like, I did a Predator movie, which is whatever. That's great. Science fiction and scary monsters. But the crew was so cool. And my boss is a friend of mine. And, and we got to work again together, like, back-to-back shows. And it was just a great experience. And we know what the show is, right?
Yeah. Like,
and there's nothing against it, but it's just
there's
a,
different
it's
types.
Just a
there's different
fiction.
Flavors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then I did a show with Robert Zemeckis, who's
wow.
like, yeah, wow. I know. That's what I said. That's what I said.
Wow,
wow,
wow
Robert.
Wow.
So
just writing a paper on him.
He's something
else.
Oh,
yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. So it was a nice little show, and it didn't turn out to be that well received. It also wasn't the show that I thought we were making. It's called Welcome to Marwen.
Yes.
And it just sort of, I think generally it kind of missed its mark. But what a great experience all the way through. And and just being around Robert and watching him work and watching and learning and just paying attention. And it's just like going to school. You know?
I feel like even in my own experience on sets, the learning is what I'm the most excited about doing.
Yeah.
Just like being a sponge, absorbing everything I can. And then how fantastic to be down the road and in the position where you're learning from people that whose work you really admire instead of just, you know, whoever happens to be there. Maybe they're great, but you are unfamiliar, but then you walk on the set and you're like,
you learn
that's Robert Zemeckis.
Doing.
Well, and for me, learning is you know, like Percy Jackson crash course or revisiting Greek mythology.
Yeah.
But for real this time, like I got to actually remember this stuff, not just get past the test.
Yeah.
Like the Revenant, like the fur trade. We all learned about the fur trade, kinda, right?
I learned about it.
Yeah, but then it was just like an essay and a test. But this was like, I gotta know everything about the fur trade, right? Like all that, what they wore, how they traveled, what they used to sleep on, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So
getting
down to those details was really, you know, going to museums and learning for real.
I was gonna say too, even just your in looking at some of the talks that you've given, like the specific attention to detail that you were able to give in The Revenant and getting, I mean, your job especially is so tactile, like it must, you know, you get to create and then immerse yourself in the world of what you're doing.
Yep.
Before we have lovely questions on The Revenant. Maybe just for our listeners who may be unfamiliar with kind of the hierarchy of art department or maybe the different positions.
Yes, the
would
structure of it all.
Breaking it down a little bit for
I've
us.
I've done this before.
Yeah.
Not your first rodeo.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
Thank you for doing it again.
No problem. So in film production, so during production, well, pre-production and during production, there's all the prep work. There's and as far as the look of a show, that's all in charge under the charge of the production designer.
Yeah.
And so they sort of come up with the concept illustrations. They've read the script. And they hire an art department. And the art department consists of set designers, graphic designers, and art directors that will either look at a location and make augmentations to it or build or draw sets that you're going to build on stage. Mm. And so, for example, if we have a police station and we're going to do it on stage, the art department will draw that police station, like draw the doors and the windows and the walls and if there's staircases. And then they will give that to the construction department, and the construction department will build that. Mm. And through the art department, they will pick colors and stuff like that. But then there'll just be a giant empty space. That's where I come in and put in all the desks and chairs and paperwork and posters and lighting and wanted posters and all the photocopiers and, you know, fishing trophies for the sheriff who happens to be, you know, put all the characters sort of layers in. That's sort of what set decoration does.
Mm.
And so my boss is the production designer. But I'm sort of a separate department in set decoration.
Yeah.
And then in my department, there's me and I have an assistant. And then I have a coordinator who's sort of in charge of all our trucks because we have to pick stuff up and
lots
drop
of
off.
People and things.
Lots of logistics.
Yes. And then so there's drivers, and then we have electricians, painters that are just for us. In, for example, Percy Jackson, we have like four painters.
Yeah.
We have a carpenter that's full-time just for us. Wow. We have about 30 or 40 set dressers and two drivers. And so it's just sort of, depending on the scale of the show. Right?
Yeah. Well, this is what we were kind of touching on before you came in. I was curious to know, because in very small independent productions, for example, you have the production designer and then you'll have an art assistant and a few, or like the art director and a few art assistants. What is kind of the range, I guess, that you've worked with in terms of like independent productions versus something like that?
Yeah, I mean, everything. Yeah, from like, a couple of years ago, a friend of mine had a short film called Quarantine Fling, and it was like I think it was a one-day shoot or a two-day shoot. It was tiny. And he's like, can you help me? He's like, yeah, I can totally help you. And he called it production designing. But basically, it was just like, okay, we got to get some shelving in here. We got to change the art there because it's not, you know, copyrighted and that sort of stuff. It's just me.
Yeah.
You know, me and one other person, you know.
I was,
all the way up to just huge.
Yeah.
Right? I did, like, Pachinko.
Yeah.
I was in 5 months in Korea.
That was beautiful, by the way.
Thank you.
Visually stunning.
Thank you. It was a tough one, actually. But it was good. And we in Korea, we shot in 7 different cities. So I'm, like, prepping all these locations. But meanwhile, I've got a crew in Vancouver because we're prepping, because we shot half of it in Vancouver.
Okay.
And so while I'm in Korea, I am looking at pictures of cabinetry and wallpapers and stuff like that that's in Vancouver getting picked. So I'm kind of working two things at the same time. So I've got a crew in Korea, I've got a crew in Vancouver, and I just have to compartmentalize it all and just sort of So it can it's all the same principle, just the scale can get big. Yeah.
Right. I wonder, like, how much of it would you say is logistics versus actually getting your hands dirty and kind of like being in the
art
part of it?
I mean, logistics is a huge part of it. Mm. But then you have to switch lanes and sort of have a critical eye of something. Mm. So, like, we just did on Percy Jackson just now on stage, we prepped a kitchen, like a restaurant kitchen set. Mm. So, like, big industrial ovens and stuff like that. Yeah. And it's weather cover because we're shooting out in Langley, and if it gets really bad, they have to have somewhere to go. So this is a set that's going to sit there. So the logistics of like finding the stuff, getting it drawn in, getting it hooked up, like there's a hood fan that has to be hung and it's a certain weight and there's all that kind of technical stuff. Mm-hmm. But then I've got to walk in there and go, I think we need a little, this doesn't look, like this is the phone. Shouldn't we have some business cards stuck around the phone? You know, like I'm thinking back to, actually I worked in a kitchen. So you're thinking, you do a little research. It's like, so there's certain things you still have to go put your artistic, and then you got to go, okay, how do we do on budget? Okay, I think we're fine. We got about $4,000 left. So if we have any requests, we can cover that.
Yeah.
And then move on to the next thing. So I think you switch lanes a lot. Like a lot in production, pre-production is budgeting for me.
Yeah.
Like a lot of budgeting. Yeah. And really trying to get accurate budgets in so you can really hit the finish line with not a penny left and not a penny over sort of thing. So
is that the case a lot of the time?
Yeah.
You don't want to leave a penny left because they won't give you that penny next time.
There you go. I did a horror movie a couple of years ago called Antlers, which was actually too scary for me to watch.
Was it with Daniel Radcliffe?
He wasn't in it. Who was in it? I can't remember some of the names. Scott Cooper was the director who did a movie called Lonely Heart, which is really cool, with Jeff Bridges. Anyways, it was great. It was a good experience, but we have a very small budget.
Yeah.
And I was really tracking it because it was tight to this. What they scripted and what they gave me for a budget was very
different.
Yeah, very different. Yeah. I knew I could pull it off, but I had to be I had to track.
Yeah.
Be very up to date on our expenses. And I think I came in like with $600 left or something like that. Like it was amazing. And that's lucky. Like I expect to go $5,000 under, $5,000 over, something like that.
Yeah.
But this one was just like, woo, skating in.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but budgets can be huge, right? And you know, I can't say what we're spending on Percy, but it's like a huge amount. That doesn't mean I can spend all in one spot either. I have to make that last over the whole season.
Yeah.
And every episode. Yeah. So if I can let's get the cheaper one, because then when we need more lighting here, I can afford, you know, you can, you don't try and scrimp all the time, because that things will start to look cheap.
Yeah.
But you can be clever.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Keep your rentals to a smaller window, you know. Yeah. Don't rent it for such a long time, things like that.
Which I'm sure is probably, those kinds of decisions just come with experience.
Yeah.
And doing
yeah,
it.
Instinct.
Yeah.
Yeah, by now.
I'm curious to know, as the set decorator, are you, I'm assuming, mostly getting feedback and input from the production designer, or do you also get involved with the director?
Definitely with the director.
And
yes.
is that kind of, because I'm thinking, selfishly maybe, I'm directing my thesis film in January, and I'm working, you know, with my production designer and with my art director, and they have some great questions, and I'm curious to know what's helpful for you from a director or from a production designer to, like, be able to build out the space. Do you mostly look at the script? Do you sit down and, you know, talk with the director? Can I get some extra information on X, Y, and Z? Or,
Yeah. I mean, it definitely starts with script.
Yeah.
And then, you know, from the script, you're going to know the character and the age of the character and the background of the character. So you can sort of go a certain distance. And then you can come up with some of your own ideas. But you definitely want to schedule time with the director, even if it's just to say, this is what I was thinking. And some directors will be like, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, move on, sort of thing. And other directors will say, oh, yeah, you know, it'd be really great if he had a seashell collection because his mom used to take him to the beach.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's part of our backstory. And we have a flashback. So little things like that. So you just fill all that stuff in. Like Percy Jackson season one, he's like, I think he gets kicked out of Yancey Academy. He's coming home back to his apartment.
Yeah.
And I did his bedroom like a kid that had sort of like been sent off to boarding school.
Yeah.
And, you know, like a 12-year-old kid would have 12-year-old kid stuff, but he would also have like 8-year-old kid stuff, right? And even like baby stuff.
Yes.
There might even be a stuffy in the corner that his mom, he loves, and he just, you know. But the day his friends come over, that thing is gone, right?
Yes.
So, but he's not there yet.
Yeah.
And then, so that was sort of the feeling how I did that bedroom.
Yeah.
And then this season, he's older. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're just letting Percy get older. So I had a meeting with the director at the very beginning. It's like, okay, I'm going to change the wallpaper. I think I should change his bed.
Yeah.
I think his dresser's the same. You know, maybe some of the posters are the same, but let's bring in like mountain biking or, you know, some things that he's now moving towards. And so we just sort of talked about that to make sure that he and I were on the same page as sort of the direction I was heading. Mm. And then I'll make either a digital presentation, or sometimes I'll just use like foam core and like tape up some pictures and just sort of say, this is what I was thinking for this. This is what I'm thinking for this. And then they sort of, that's good. And then there's no surprises, right? And then they get the set. And and also like for example, in the bedroom this season, the director said, I know there's a shot I want to do. And it was a shot, actually we cut the carpet out of the floor and had plexiglass in the stage floor so he could put a camera like low.
Whoa.
And Percy rolls out of bed onto the camera, onto the plexiglass.
I love that.
But that meant I needed to dress the ceiling.
Yeah.
Right? Not just, but there could be like, what could we do? So we put like the glow and dark stars, we put a mobile up there.
Yeah.
But he knew that he was going to do that shot. So it's like, okay,
that's
very helpful, right? So then it's like, oh, let's put some model planes up there. Oh, they're too big. Let's put this up there, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, communication is great at the beginning.
Yeah.
Sometimes the directors, the set is not every set has to be like all full of character and stuff like that. So you just want to let them know you got them covered sort of thing. You know, we got this, we're going to make sure that's clear. And this is, you know, and I know you want the exit to go this way. So we're going to put a line of plants there.
Yeah.
Just stuff, like mechanical stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
some directors might have a very specific vision, whereas others are kind of like,
help me.
Yeah.
Have you got ideas?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's a great idea. And that gets them going.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, if you're on a big enough show, you'll have the production designer will employ an illustrator. So they'll do like a painting with a computer of like the look. So, for example, I mean, on Percy, we've got tons of them. But like I've been looking at our cave. We have a cave for Polyphemus, the Cyclops. Mm-hmm. So we have, you know, that sort of there's been illustrations of that have been evolving a little bit.
Yeah.
And then the illustrator will call me and say, what were you thinking for the cave? And I'll send him some pictures, and then he'll put those into the illustration so that we kind of meet
cool.
at the same place.
And
actually I'll tell you a story. Very funny thing happened is I found this this like royal carriage, like a mock, like a royal carriage, like for weddings. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was super cheap. And I was like, oh,
like a horse-drawn carriage.
Yeah,
type
like
thing?
But more royal, like more fancy
regal.
Wedding. Yeah, regal stuff. Yeah. And it was super cheap. And I was like, oh, that'd be a good thing for the Cyclops to have like in the cave, like as part of his treasure, right? Like just buried amongst the rocks and stuff like that.
My precious.
And the designer was like, yeah, that's really cool. We'll pull the wheels off and we'll just stick it amongst the rocks and then we'll have seaweed on it. And then the next thing you know, it was like in the illustration.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, it was in the script.
Oh.
And I went like, oh, hang on. So
they,
I guess the writers, they were like looking for a place for one of our characters to hide. And they're like, and he hides in a royal carriage. It's like, oh, I better get that thing, you know.
Wow. Yeah.
So and that never happens. Yeah. But it was sort of an upstream sort of situation where it's like I had an idea and it kind of went the other direction.
Yeah.
You know? Because, you know, scripts, they change and they evolve.
They
you know, they have to change dialogue. And it's like, oh, he walks in, but where's he going to hide? And it's like, well, that carriage thing in the illustration. So next thing you know, it's in the script. It's funny.
That is so cool.
Don't get used to that. It never happens.
It'd be flattering, I can imagine, to read that in the script and go,
well,
wow,
also,
that was
also
me.
A little pressure. It's like, I better get that thing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I got to build it.
I better figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then re-budget for it.
Yes, exactly.
I was just going to ask, like, really briefly, too. Because, you know, you get to add these details about a character's life, especially when you're doing something that's indicative of them as a person, like a bedroom or something like that, you know. Do you, like, I guess in this instance you were able to collaborate with the writers, but is there ever a conversation between you and the writers about maybe details that you want in there, or is that mostly just mediated through
the
director?
If the writers are producers and they're around, sometimes the writers aren't around.
Right.
Yeah. But if they're producers, sometimes the writers will be producers and they're around and I'm like, you know, I was thinking of this as this, or they'll describe something, but they won't have described it clearly enough for me. So I will just go to them and say specifically, what were you thinking when they kicked the door down, like, or you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then also you'll just go through a script and sort of highlight questions, you know, you know, things like that. So just constant, lots of lists. Yeah.
I think maybe we'll move into The Revenant.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, before we do that, do we want to take a quick break?
Let's take a quick break.
We're at halftime.
Okay.
Half-time?
Take a quick break. I know. It goes so quickly.
It really, truly goes so fast. We'll be right back. We'll play some ads and come right back in just a moment.
We are UBC Electronica, and we love electronic music, such as Run for Them Life. When I step into the jungle, we offer DJ workshops, open decks, pop-up parties, and more. Follow our socials such as Instagram, Discord, or join us through email, ubcelectronica@gmail.com.
Knock, knock. Guess who? MRG Live coming right back at you, this time with a whole new list of upcoming live shows by your favorite artists. Hear this. Marika Hackman, Faye Webster, Empress Of, Peter Cat Recording Co., and The Rare Occasions are a few of the artists MRG Live is bringing to you. Follow at MRG Live Official on Instagram to stay tuned with all the artists performing near you.
Picture this. You're walking into your local record store and start skimming the many records until you find an album that you recognize. You pick out the album, check the track list, and maybe only recognize a couple songs. Now you have to listen to the whole album, right? Well, why not do it together? On Discali, every show runs you through an entire album and breaks down key parts and songs that make up an album's aesthetic, art, and story. I'm your host, Oliver, and join me every Friday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. in talking about all things music. Want to discover more albums, artists, record pressings, and concerts? I got you. That's every Friday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., so tune in to Discali to discover different discographies and add to the musical discourse.
Oh, And we're back here on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Georgia.
And I'm Hannah.
And this is Film Picnic. We are here with set decorator Hamish Purdy. We've been talking a little bit about Percy Jackson, his recent work on the Percy Jackson series, and we're going to move in to talk about The Revenant.
Yes!
That little film.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Little, that little project. Where, I'm just thinking, like, where to even begin? Let's talk about how you got the position, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand from the research, you have a mentor who...
Still
mentored, Jim Erickson.
That's right.
That was originally the production designer for the film Jack Fisk had called... Or pardon me.
Jack was the designer.
Okay.
Jack is a designer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he had worked with Jim on There Will Be Blood.
Mm-hmm. And I also wrote a paper on that film.
That's a good movie. Crazy. Yes.
Beautiful.
And then Jack, they were going to film The Revenant up in Alberta, and Jack said, Jim, let's do this. And Jim's like, I'm too old. You know?
He got his Academy Award. Yes. He's good. He can sit down now.
No, I don't think he said he's too old. But he did say, because I was Jim's assistant for Miami Vice and Beyond Borders and a couple other shows. I guess I sort of showed Jim I could do it.
Yeah.
And then Jim told Jack, just call this guy. So I had an interview with Jack.
Yeah.
We just talked and talked for hours.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be like a half hour interview. We hit it off. He's wonderful. And that's how I got the job. He just sort of said, okay, so do you want to do this with me? I'm like, Like right now I want to start. So
Yeah.
So we prepped in Vancouver, but most of it was shot in Alberta. Some of it we shot up in Squamish. So
I was just going to ask too, because is Jim retired or is he still?
Yeah, he retired after he won the Oscar for Lincoln. Yeah. So he's on Salt Spring.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's the life.
On his farm.
That's where I want to retire.
On his farm, yeah.
Better Maine.
I was going to ask, was The Revenant the only, maybe the first time, or is it the only time that you've gotten a job because someone was calling for Jim and then you got referred?
Oh, no. That might have been the only time. Yeah, that would have been the only time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
and then I got him on my own after that.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You have a very impressive resume. We were looking at letter projects.
They just kind of line up. You know, you can only do one at a time.
Yeah.
So they just sort of, luckily, when I started to get into this business, Vancouver also started to get into this business. And so,
you kind of came up together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of rode the wave. Exactly. Yeah. So, I think one of the, I guess the first major thing I did was The X-Files. Mm-hmm. So the first season of that and the fourth season of that. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of, we started, it was small, and then, like, while we're doing it, we realized, oh, this has kind of become massive. And it sort of changed the way we could film and where and sneaky and stuff like that.
That's what you want. That's how you want it to happen.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I'm someone that definitely appreciates, I very much lean into mentorships, and, like, I love having mentors. I love mentoring people. I think it's such an amazing way to learn from someone.
We
talk about the importance of that on this show. I'm curious how you got in contact with Jim, how that mentorship kind of began. And
yeah, I was a set dresser.
Yeah.
Like just dressing sets, installing art and moving furniture around. And he was a decorator in town. He's got quite a resume. And we crossed paths and, I guess he liked the way I worked, and mm-hmm. I just sort of I think in set decoration I've done every job, set dresser and buyer and on set dresser and assistant decorator I basically Jim just kept giving me opportunities we did the movie Watchmen. He was the decorator, and I'm very proud of that movie, and all the sets were incredible. I was just there to just help him get that movie made. And I learned from him, like, how he'd respond to changes or how he'd respond to, crazy requests and stuff like that. And I just sort of, like, just watch what he's doing. It's a funny side note. I think I've mentioned this before, but I think 3 or 4 or maybe even 5, I'll have to double check this, but at least 3 or 4 former assistants of Jim Erickson have gone on to become Oscar-nominated decorators.
Yes. Which is so amazing. So he's breeding
something.
That just kind of goes to show the importance of...
Yeah.
Or, like, the value that you can gain from just watching and observing and being...
I definitely learned a style from him. And it's not only a visual style, but a style of, like, approach.
Yeah.
Communication,
working with others.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Yeah. So
process.
Workflow.
If the special effects, you know, department is panicking about something, help them. I'm glad I'm not those guys. Just what can you do, sort of thing.
If the blood is pink.
I was going to say, was the blood?
That was my problem, yeah, for some reason. Okay. Yeah.
Can you maybe tell us a little bit about that for our listeners?
That funny story?
Well,
back to The Revenant. So that is the scene where Leo and the First Nations fellow are in the field and they're eating buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And he's eating like the buffalo liver and he's starving and we have to have it's fake, obviously, everything's fake, but the way blood looks in the snow, you know, when you look at blood in movies, or we know when it looks wrong, right? Like you just know if it looks like syrup or something.
Yeah.
Right? There's just
even if you're not consciously looking,
just
because
we've all
just
cut
like,
ourselves.
Yeah.
Right? And so
yeah.
There's a certain thing that's like, that doesn't look right, you know?
Yeah.
And blood in particular is in snow behaves. It's very specific, but there's like a plasma aura around it. And because of that show was so demanding, the director and the director of photography, we just had to make sure everything could sort of hold up.
Yeah.
And so I had actually some food-grade pig's blood that I could sort of test on the snow. And because it's like a food product, I was allowed to use it.
It's not like you.
Slaughtering
pigs for the purpose.
No, exactly. And so I was able to sort of use that for close-ups and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because we were trying the fake blood, and it kind of went pink in the snow, and it was like, oh.
Not
that's a big
want.
Deal if the camera's going to be right down by his face, you know.
Yeah.
And you just want to make sure everything is, like, they've spent so much time on his wardrobe and hair and makeup. The bloody snow that's just 3 inches away had better be just as good. It seems simple, but boy is the pressure on when it's not looking right, you know.
Yeah.
So
those
kind of details, those kind of details keep you up, but that's all part of it, you know, and you kind of, then you start to be looking at everything, right?
Yeah,
like,
right.
You just sort of walk into a space and you go, that's wrong.
Yeah.
That's wrong. That looks weird. Why would people stack things like that? That kind of thing, you know.
Do you feel like there's more... because I know in other interviews you've done, like, you talk about how the director has a very fluid camera.
That director.
Alejandro Iñárritu.
Yes, right. Yeah.
Hopefully I'm pronouncing that
last
name correctly.
Yeah.
So you're saying, we need to cover our bases 110%, 18:22 in every single frame and every single possible angle.
Yeah.
Was there any kind of pressure between interior or exterior, like maybe where you've felt like one over the other was like more pressure for detail, or you're just
No, that's a good question. No, because we were tight, like in the opening scene where there's the attack on the camp, that we rehearsed that for weeks, right?
Oh, really?
The whole move, yeah, because there was only a couple of stitches, what they call stitches, where you roll past something and then you continue the move. He was going to go, the camera was going to, it's all steady cam, and they were going to go down tight on a guy with an arrow in his back and then up to a thing and then over to a horse. And so it's just a constant, in that particular movie, that particular scene, it was just a constant sort of, the camera could just wind up anywhere because the actor could fall a little further. So why would you not, you know, just finish everything?
Yeah.
In the end, it's easier.
Yeah.
Because then you know what your target is, right?
Yeah.
You'll be in trouble if you go, oh, they'll never go over there.
And then,
you know,
of course, they will go to the one spot.
All my buckets are there.
Yeah.
The plastic buckets are. Yeah. So you just start to create an entire environment that looks like it exists, you know, other than the guy with the camera
and the boom operator.
Roughly how long did each set take once you were on set? Like after the pre-production, how long did the setup take for each set for The Revenant specifically?
You mean for my setup or for the camera setup?
For your setup.
Oh, I would spend a couple weeks on each set.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, at least. Yeah. I mean, but like, for example, that camp, that trapper camp that got attacked and they're trying to get into that boat, like, because Alberta's so weird with weather. Like, it snowed once. You know, it's September. And of course it's like, we woke up and
it snowed in September. Yeah.
Yeah, like really hard.
Yeah, of course.
It's like, okay, so we've got to rebuild all our structures. And
that's
and then we wanted, you know, all these trappers sleep in different areas. And then we wanted each of their areas to look like someone had actually slept there. So we kind of, you got to work. Massage those little living spaces.
Yeah.
And like actually boil some water and spill some food and, you know, cook some lunch there if you want on the fire. And just sort of get into the space. We always had like the correct ropes and the axes and the knives. Mm-hmm. And so if, you know, if I'm tying up a tarp, I'll be using a knife, cut the rope, tie up the tarp, and then stick the knife in the log and then, you know, and then move on. So I actually use the rope that is right for the time. And because I was using the knife that's right for the time, I just stuck it into the thing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
you can, so you're not sort of like, where did I put those scissors? You know, it's like, no, everything's right for the time. So you kind of get... They call it like method.
Yeah, I was going to say you were in it.
Yeah, like
you were in the
dressing.
Time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it's easier that way, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you need to, and we have
less to keep track of.
Less to keep track of and less to sort of hope to avoid, you know. So you just sort of make sure everything looks right for the time.
And what a treat for the actors to be able to walk into
definitely.
A set that's just entirely
they love
so
that.
And I saw all of the like the interiors of the bedroom and all of the like handwritten notes that you
had.
Yeah,
so
like that as an actor, I would I would be so excited to just be going through it and be like, "Ooh, what's this in my bedroom?"
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they do appreciate that. It's good. It's good for a couple of reasons. One, it means they can just shoot it and shoot it tight or whatever they want. Mm. It also kind of sends a signal to the director and the actor that you're paying attention and you care.
Yeah.
So. You know, like we're all in this with you.
Yeah.
You're supported.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, if you open the drawer, it's not just going to be empty. There's going to be like coins and things. It's easy.
Yeah.
You know, or keys.
You're
free
to do what you need to do in this space.
Exactly.
And you don't have to worry about,
exactly.
I can't touch that or I shouldn't sit there or, you know.
There's a scene where Percy's cleaning, back to Percy Jackson, there's a scene where he's cleaning up his bedroom to get ready to go to school.
Yeah.
And so we've got to have like, dishes with clothes. You know, cereal dried on
and
the clothes and stuff like that, and not just sort of fake but like actually mess it up a little bit so that he has something to do when he's doing the cleanup and then he can develop that a little more okay, I'll go over here and then I'll go over here and then I'll go over there and
but
then
he has something to play with initially
no, they definitely appreciate walking into a set, especially if it's his bedroom, so it's very personal to him, so if he walks in and he's not surprised and,
You created so many fantastic, setups and scenes for The Revenant specifically. You talk about the attention to detail with the flag that you did, but then, you know, you've got the boat that was created, the mountain of buffalo skulls,
the bear.
The bear, the puppet, can you talk about the bear quickly?
Bear I didn't do.
You didn't do the bear.
No, the bear I didn't do. The bear was done by a company called Legacy in L.A. And
do they specialize in that kind of?
Yeah.
In bear
they can do
animatronics,
a lot,
like giant puppet things.
Yeah, but I mean, and we had the bear, and then we had the skinned bear.
Oh,
it was very much in the background, but
because
that's the skin of the bear that attacked him is the skin that he wears.
Whoa.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Because he pulls it and puts it around him. That's what he wears, like when he's in the river.
Yeah.
And that actually, through extensive permitting and permissions, was a real grizzly bear pelt that the wardrobe department got.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can imagine that must have been a lot of red tape.
It was a lot of red tape,
as
it should be.
Wow.
But it was, very controlled. But fake, I mean, I had fake fur and I had real fur.
Yeah. Because you did a lot of the beaver pelts as well.
I did all the beaver pelts.
All the beaver pelts.
Yeah. And so, we came up with a system of sort of, you know, close-up stuff and then background stuff. But but real fur is very different.
Yeah.
It's quite durable and it behaves in water differently. And so
that's
why they want to get the right stuff.
Yeah.
As a bit of a follow-up to that, I saw a picture of you standing in a body of water with an elk skeleton.
Oh, yes.
I was so angry.
Yeah.
Freezing.
I was freezing, but I was angry because I had just got a phone call. It's funny, my assistant was with me, and I just got a phone call that two of my crew had quit.
Oh.
No.
And there was a lot of quitting on that show and firing. It was quite a tough show for a lot of people for various reasons. But
The Revenant.
Yeah. The Revenant. Anyways, So the opening scene is they're walking through a flooded forest, mm-hmm. and they're hunting an elk, and so they were the, and then he's butchering Leo is butchering the elk, and then he hears a gunshot, and it's because the camp is getting attacked, and then he runs through the, if you guys recall,
yes.
So then he runs back to the camp.
Right.
So that scene of me that picture of me standing yeah. in the is was supposed to be an epilogue, mm-hmm. which
okay.
was the skeleton of that elk underwater. And so what we were doing is we had, now to give away all the secrets, we had a rancher in Alberta that gave us a cow skeleton.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was a cow. Was it a cow or a? Yeah. No. Elk. No. It was supposed to be an elk. I think it was a deer. It was a deer skeleton, but it was supposed to be an elk. Okay. Anyways,
yeah.
It was a little smaller than it was supposed to be. And
movie
then
magic.
I had an elk.
Movie magic.
I had a elk skull with okay. antlers, and I kind of stuck it on there. And then we
okay.
buried it.
Frankenstein.
Then we buried it in this creek
yep.
and kind of weighted it down. And then we had GoPros, and we were filming it to then show the director, is this what you had in mind, right? Like, will this work?
Because he... So much effort for just a sample to propose to
I
someone,
know,
too.
I know. Anyways, so Jack and my assistant Scott and I were out there with this elk jamming it into the creek.
My gosh.
Yeah, and I think at that point I was a little angry that I had lost two more crew members
right.
that I had said, okay, let's just get this done. And I walked out there like in my jeans and just said, let's just do this. And Jack's like, you're nuts, you're getting soaked. I was like, let's just do this. Let's just do this. So then put the GoPro on the end of a stick and filmed it. It didn't make it into the, they never ended up shooting it. But yeah, that's how it is,
yeah,
right? You just
try.
It looked cool though. There was like movement around the bones. And
right.
You can see how that would make a good end to a show if that's the beginning of the show.
Has there ever been something that you've created for a shoot that didn't get used that you were really disappointed
oh, yeah.
that didn't make it in there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
And you just
yeah.
have to like,
you just have to
let
it go.
Water off a duck's back.
You must.
Take a breath and move
you
on.
You must.
Yeah.
I mean, Man of Steel. Mm-hmm. Man of Steel, we had the you know, he saves the people in the oil rig, right?
Yeah. So Superman.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So there's he's on a fish boat, and then he sees this oil rig that's on fire, and then the next thing you know, he's like clinging to the side of the,
yeah.
the you know, and then in the movie we cut to him like opening a door and rescuing some guys.
Yeah.
But we had done like a full on hallway all plumbed with fire and dropping there was a little bit of that, but not nearly as much. That's the editors, right?
Yeah.
So you can't, you let everybody saw it that was working on the show.
Yeah.
The people that hire me saw it.
Yeah.
So
they know what you can do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, it's a shame when it's cutting room floor. But
yeah.
I mean, actors go through that.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like entire monologues.
Yeah.
So that's just, you gotta
immediately cut.
You gotta just let that go.
Yeah.
It can get you down. Especially if you like really worked hard and it was like a lot of effort.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if I knew if it was going to be 1 second, I wouldn't have.
Yeah.
But you can't. Yeah. You just always got to try, get it right.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
I wish we could talk for
ages. I know,
ages.
It goes so quickly. We have so many questions, but we are at time. We're having to wrap up. I think just a final wrap-up question.
Yes.
Because our listeners are mostly people that are new to the industry, curious about the industry, mm-hmm. or looking to gain more experience.
Mm.
What piece of advice would you give to someone who's just starting out who wants to get into the art department?
Into the art department. I mean, I guess, again, my experience of getting into it is a little different than current, you know, because you guys have social media and all this sort of stuff. But I would say, make yourself available for student films,
mm-hmm.
for a little, you know, like if you do a student film with someone, they probably have the project that they have for their class, but they probably have another project they want to do for themselves in the back of their head. Just be around those people, be involved with, show interest, say, look, I can help, and the next thing, it sort of snowballs. That's my approach. I think that's how it works. But also, like, take a movie that's really good in art direction, production design, set decoration, and just sort of look at it from just that perspective.
Yeah.
Like, just forget you've seen it already. So now look at it for the sets and sort of understand, like, what makes a crack den?
You know?
That sort of thing. Like, think about it, because there's certain cues that you're getting, and I had to sort of look at things and sort of understand, okay, well, what makes a crack den? And then you sort of understand it and create those things.
Yeah.
And you very quickly communicate to an audience. So you can look at good movies and any movie that sort of has good conscious production design. And you can tell, you know, oh, they made the decision to do this or they made the decision to do that, you know.
Each piece is important.
You could start by looking at, like, the Oscar winners for every year.
Yeah.
Like, Poor Things. The production design is crazy, right?
Yeah.
And so just stop and look at it. Or what was another one? Dune. I don't think it won, but, I mean, it's just incredible choices they made, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would, I mean, that's not really a good answer for you, but I would
get involved.
Yeah, just get involved. Stay interested. And if you're around the people that are also interested, they're more contacts for you because they hear about something and they, you know, and of course, the unions like IATSE, the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, which basically all big proper TV shows or movies, they're going to hire through there to get the, you know, if you need 200 painters, that's where you get them.
Yeah.
But they have a great source of if you go to their website, they'll tell you like about all the departments, what it takes to get in. So if you wanted to ultimately like really pursue it, if you go to their website, it'll say, so if you want to get into set decoration, here's some of the basic stuff you have. It's different from when I got in, but there's courses, you know, film etiquette courses and stuff like that.
That's amazing.
Definitely.
I'm going to give a final compliment. Just when you're talking about attention to detail, I loved that you gave you made a time period correct hook on the internal of one of the Revenant sets. It was like a pot on a hook.
You set
a time period correct hook. Just attention
right.
to details.
I mean, you know it's going to be silhouetted, so.
Yeah. Got to have that in there. I had to mention that. I thought that was
great. Thank you.
Thank you, listeners, so much for joining us this morning. Thank you, Hamish, for being here.
Taking your time. You're going all the way to Langley after this.
We're
grateful for
Percy.
It.
Go ahead. Hold.
Listeners, please enjoy the rest of your day. And don't forget to check us out on at FLM Picnic on Instagram. Or you can find recordings of our episodes online at the CITR Radio website or on Spotify.
At Film Picnic. We'll see you next week on Film Picnic as we continue debunking the film industry with meaningful conversation,
one picnic at a time.
Coming up next on CITR is Discolly with Ollie.
Yay!